Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking by phone with Jackie Lynn, who's the Executive Director of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we're talking with you in Chicago.
That's right.
And is that the national headquarters for
it? It is.
And tell us what the Episcopal Peace Fellowship is.
Well, the Episcopal Peace Fellowship is a national membership organization with approximately 2,000 members. We're affiliated with the Episcopal Church, but we're a separate organization of members who are particularly concerned about peace and justice issues. Our mission is following Jesus' call for peace, connecting Episcopalians, doing justice, dismantling violence, and striving to be peacemakers. And so we have about 50 chapters across the country working locally and nationally and sometimes internationally. And they're at different degrees. Some are housed in Episcopal churches. Some are with our diocesan structure. But all of our members are working both locally and nationally around issues of peace and justice.
Now, you use several words in that description that some of our listeners may not be familiar with. Let me help them with that. What's a diocese?
Okay, sorry.
No, that's quite all right.
I thought that was coming. It's just a physical geographic location. There are nine different regional bases for how we describe where churches are. For example, I'm right now in the Chicago Diocese. They have about 132 churches within this geographical grounding. So it's just a way that we divide up the United States and some of our partners in Central America.
And for some, the word Episcopal, they may not know that's connected to also what's called the Anglican Church.
That's right. We are in affiliation with the Anglican Church around the world, actually, and it's a loose affiliation that was formed within the 20th century. So it's a fairly recent conglomerate of churches that come together. They come together every 10 years to talk about different issues around the world, and we have a loose a federation with the Anglican Communion. We are a part of the Anglican Communion, but within the United States, we are called Episcopal.
And Episcopal churches are served by Episcopal priests who, as opposed to Catholic priests, are allowed to marry.
That's right. And while our services, our order of worship is really, really similar to the Roman Catholic Church, the major differences are that we have women priests and women deacons. Priests are allowed to marry. We embrace with our policies gay, lesbian, transgendered people, and our priests and deacons and leaders of the church who are gay are embraced. So those are some of the differences between the Roman Catholic Church and the Episcopal Church.
Now, that last issue you raised about the welcoming of gays, lesbian, transgendered folks in the Episcopal Church to be open about their orientation, their being with partners, that's a relatively new and rather controversial issue within the Episcopal Church, right?
Yes, it is.
And when did that all come about?
Well, it's been coming for some time, but in 2003, the church as a whole honored the election of an Episcopal bishop in New Hampshire who was openly gay. And, of course, that issue is was very hot at the time and still lingers on in many Christian communities. But that was sort of a time frame in 2003 when the National Church confirmed his election in New Hampshire. And, of course, that's Bishop Gene Robinson.
Let me give phone numbers so listeners can join our conversation. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this Sunday night, April 1st, with Jackie Lynn, the Executive Director nationally of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship. And if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, do give us a call. 1-800-222-9455 is the number you can use wherever you're listening in the continental U.S., even on the Internet. Again, that's 800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. If you're in the immediate Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listening area, we have several local lines. Please use those if it's a local call in the 217 area code. That number is 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. Now, Jackie, you mentioned that there are, within the Episcopal Church, priests and deacons. You yourself are a deacon. Tell us how that's different from being a priest.
Well, yes. In the Episcopal Church, the role of the deacon is to interpret the world to the church. And it's a big job, but somebody has to do it. So, and we are responsible to the bishops in our diocese and just assigned to different churches. So the primary roles are to tend to the poor, to release the captives and the oppressed, and call the church to proclaim justice and peace for those in the world who are suffering from every kind of oppression, and to have the church on the front lines of working for justice and peace.
I want to get back to those themes and spend quite a bit of time this this hour talking about some of those things, particularly in relation to what the Episcopal Peace Fellowship does to bring about those goals. But I'd like to make a little bit more of a transition at this time from something we just heard on Weekend All Things Considered. Guy Raz was interviewing a professor from the University of North Carolina, Bart Ehrman, who's a popular writer. He's a professor there of religion, but he writes at a popular level. And one of the issues that Guy Raz asked him about was the subject of Ehrman's most recent book, which is Did Jesus Exist? And he does say he did exist. Ehrman is not himself a Christian, but he grew up in a Christian tradition, and now he calls himself an agnostic. But he does say that Jesus did exist. But when they ask him, when Guy asked him about today for Christians Palm Sunday, Professor Ehrman said, well, he said, that really couldn't have happened, Jesus coming in on a donkey and people shouting Hosanna. The Roman government would never have allowed that someone to sort of proclaim themselves a Messiah without arresting them immediately. Now, I happen to know that there are many religious scholars, Christian and otherwise, even some other agnostics, who say that that's not the appropriate conclusion of But let me ask your opinion.
Okay. Well,
here comes Jesus riding this donkey, and the all four Gospels report this and talk about him fulfilling a prophecy that Zechariah had about someone who would be humble, not who was coming to shake down the Roman Empire, but, as you say, to be concerned with the poor.
Well, first let me say that I am not a New Testament scholar.
Sure.
So I want to get that out of the way right now. But I think that the story and how you interpret the story of Jesus coming into Jerusalem, I don't think it is like thousands and thousands of people and lining the streets and having a parade. I think that perhaps it was much less than that, and that over 2,000 years we have glorified that expression. Jesus riding a donkey is very symbolic of the kind of work that he did, you know, in all of his ministry. And so whether we believe that there was actually thousands of people waving their palms, singing Hosanna, and especially some Sunday in some day in the spring, or whether we think that that was, you know, that Jesus rode, came into Jerusalem at that time and, as a very humble person, and that somebody got, some of his followers came in and got wind of it and proclaimed, you know, his leadership at that time. It's a very wonderful symbol of Jesus riding in on a donkey. And it was good that, you know, having read the gospel today, I thought it was very thoughtful that he said, make sure to tell the owners of the donkey that you'll bring it right back, to them. I thought that was very you know, responsible. So either way, it's a wonderful story of hosannas and riding in. Of course, in the Episcopal Church, we immediately go into this glorious waving of palms and walking on the sidewalks. We go into immediately the Passion about, you know, what happened the rest of the week during the day. So the glory and the symbolism of today is quickly overshadowed by a reflection of what is happening for us during Holy Week for the remainder of the week.
And the Passion that you referred to is the a technical term, sort of, or a church term for the suffering of Jesus.
Right, and the Holy Week that we observe is really the Last Supper with Jesus, where he washed his disciples' feet and servanthood. We call it Maundy Thursday, and then we go into the death of Jesus on Friday, that is pretty well marked by hourly, almost, in the Gospel of Mark. He gives us some times, which may or may not be exactly accurate, but he goes through the entire day of Jesus, the things that came up to Jesus being hung on the cross. And, of course, then on Saturday night, we celebrate from darkness to light. We call it the Great Easter Vigil on Saturday night, where we go from darkness to light, from death to life, the resurrection of Jesus, that we again celebrate on Sunday morning, actually.
Well, we do, of course, wish to Christian observers a good Palm Sunday and a happy Easter, and to our those who are observant Jews, a good Pesach as they celebrate Passover. And we have, of course, a diverse listenership, and we welcome phone calls from any folks, any religious tradition or otherwise, as we talk today about the Episcopal Peace Fellowship. Jackie Lynn, how do all these religious observances within the Episcopal Church have anything to do with concern for the poor, with concern for justice?
Well, all of Jesus' life really was concern for the poor and concern for justice. When, you know, the four Gospels of the New Testament certainly point out time and time again to, you know, free the captive, to stand. Jesus' whole life was in opposition to those who were oppressing the poor. Most of Jesus' followers were poor. So in the life of Jesus, in the Gospels, we get direction for what we're responsible to do in our lives and on our work in the world.
Tell us a little bit about what happens in these 50 chapters of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship around this country.
Well, I can tell you what's happening right now in the chapter in Chicago. We are a part of something that we have called Crosswalk. There have been 600, over 632 children who have been killed, murdered, primarily with guns since 2008. And we wanted to, in this diocese, honor the children who have been killed, and also not simply honoring them and remembering them and praying for their families, but actually getting into action. So on Holy Monday, which is tomorrow, at 5:30 in the evening, 50 organizations have come together, both secular and religious, to process from St. James Episcopal Cathedral to Daly Plaza to Old St. Pat's Roman Catholic Church and to Stroger Hospital, which is the county hospital where most of these children come to die. Their last moments are spent there. They're taken to county hospital. And so all along, we call this a procession. And so all along the way, we will be walking the 3.7 miles from St. James to Stroger. So one of the major issues that the EPF in Chicago is working on has to do with gun violence. And nationally, many of our chapters are working both locally around the violence that they experience in their communities. Also, some of our chapters are very active, reaching out to Jews and Muslims and having conversations. And where there are persecutions or around someone's religious freedom, then these EPF chapters stand by them and join hands in unity with our sisters and brothers from other faiths. Other chapters are working. Of course, many of our chapters during the Iraq War, did letter writing, campaigning, writing to their legislators, organizing around the Iraq War. Of course, we are very concerned about the Afghani War. We work in different states around eliminating the death penalty. We were a part of the coalition here in Illinois several years ago regarding the death penalty and the moratorium.
I'm talking about the march tomorrow on Holy Monday at 5:30, starting at St. James Episcopal Cathedral and going eventually to the Stroger Hospital. Are there folks who will participate in that who are particularly motivated because of the Trayvon Martin case?
Well, that just totally, is a part of Trayvon Martin is definitely very similar to children who have been killed here. And oftentimes for the children that have been killed in Illinois, there's very little write-up about, and very infrequently are there murderers found. And there's very little observance about it. So the Trayvon Martin case really highlights, the deaths of our children in every city. And, of course, that has just really highlighted the event that we're holding tomorrow night.
Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who'd like to talk with our guest today, Jackie Lynn, L-Y-N-N, who's the executive director of the National Episcopal Peace Fellowship in this country. You may call the station and talk to her live. When you call, the phone will be answered by Kyle Kroha, our engineer, and she'll put you in line to talk with our guest. Punch in 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call. If it's local in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area, in the 217 area code, 333-9455. And if you've missed part of this program or would like to hear other programs that are archived that we've had interviews over the last many years, you can go to the website will.illinois.edu/keepinthefaith and leave the G off of keeping. We're very informal. And you can find all those archived programs. And of course, you can listen live to this program at will.illinois.edu/AM. We're heard also, of course, at 90.9 FM HD3 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, as well as on 580 AM. Jackie, tell us a little bit about your personal history. How did you come to be the executive director of EPF?
Well, I came. I am from Atlanta, Georgia, originally, and I met a community organizer in Atlanta, Georgia, about 40 years ago, and we organized in the city of Atlanta to stop a highway, and we were successful. And so I was very interested in the people power and the church's role in that, and. So I came to Chicago, and we started an organization here called the Organization of the Northeast. And it was in Uptown, which is was a very interesting community and still is. There were about 85 languages spoken at the high school. It was a very multicultural place. And we worked there in Uptown for some time and then went back down south and organized in different areas around peace and justice issues. I grew up in the Presbyterian Church and have always just had a passion around organizing people to express their concerns and their wishes for, a better society that treats everyone with equal rights and grace and still doing that.
Now, when you were with the Organization of the Northeast in Uptown, when I lived in Chicago, I worked a little bit at the Jane Addams Hull House, which still existed in those days. And as I remember, in that area, that was the largest collection of Eskimos and largest collection of Native Americans in this region. I don't know if that's still true or not, but it was a very diverse neighborhood.
Yes, and Uptown was very diverse then. I think it still remains one of the most diverse. In fact, one of our partner organizations when we first started out in 1970 at that time was a sister organization to Jane Addams, which was Hull House in Uptown.
Huh.
So that was Hull House has always been involved in a lot of peace and justice work in the neighborhoods where they resided.
Yes. And you were there how long with the Organization of the Northeast?
About 6 years.
6 years. And how long have you been head of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship?
For 11 years.
11 years, okay. And I know when we talked earlier, we met in Springfield at a rally to raise the minimum wage in the state of Illinois, and you were telling me then, as I recall, that you're associated also with the FOR, with the Fellowship of Reconciliation, an international peace and peace organization?
Yes. The Fellowship of Reconciliation was founded back in the 1930s, and it is one of the largest peace and justice organizations and was a real leader during many of the different efforts over the years, especially in the civil rights movement, and they are a place where many peace fellowships, there are peace fellowships of almost every denomination there's and every religion, and the Fellowship of Reconciliation has had a part in developing them and assisting. Right now, Fellowship of Reconciliation is a partner with Episcopal Peace Fellowship in an effort that we have going to boycott Starbucks.
Tell us why.
Well, Starbucks was asked, and then, there's only one state left that does not have laws for open carry and or conceal and carry of guns. And back in 2010, California, in California, different places of business like Pete's Coffee, California Pizza Kitchen, Disney, and IKEA, as well as Starbucks, were asked by the Brady Campaign to ban guns in their stores. And all of the venues except Starbucks did ban guns. And so today, Starbucks has become a real haven for folks to bring in almost any kind of gun possible into the Starbucks stores. And we're working, Fellowship of Reconciliation, Accessible Peace Fellowship, the United Church of Christ, and many other organizations are working with a group called Gun Victims Action Council that is felt like we needed an economic lever. And so so we started this boycott on Valentine's Day this year. And we also have an open letter to Starbucks because right now we wanted to, EPF, Episcopal Peace Fellowship, wanted to thank Starbucks for their corporate policies that are socially responsible, especially with regard to the marriage equality for same-sex partners that they've worked in the state of Washington and also earlier had worked with the Supreme Court to strike down the federal definition of marriage. And so we wanted to thank them for their corporate legislative responsibility, and we're saying now the next step is to join with these other places like IKEA and California Kitchens and others to ban handguns and other firearms in their stores.
Tell listeners who don't know about the Brady Campaign.
Yes. Well, the Brady Campaign, of course, started several years ago when Brady was shot, and as a way to point out the dangers of handguns in our community. And since President Obama has taken office in 2008, the rise of handguns is unbelievable, and our every state legislature is dealing with more and more ways to have guns on campuses, to have guns in state legislature, and then in New Hampshire. There are just many, many, a proliferation of guns has expanded exponentially. And so the Brady Campaign in 2010, responded to this, and they received 33,000 signatures on petitions asking that Starbucks ban guns from their stores. However, we felt like that an economic lever might be, you know, what we needed to bring more pressure onto the Starbucks campaign. So that's why we joined with the Fellowship of Reconciliation to support the Gun Victims Action Council. There are 14 million gun victims and, you know, their families who have suffered enormously from guns being so prevalent in our society. A lot of the research has been suppressed about guns and the effect of guns. And so, but the research that does exist definitely points to the fact that it's not big news, but that all the studies show that open carry and concealed carry create significant, and I'm quoting here from the American Journal of Public Health, create significant risk to public safety and do little to provide safety to the gun carrier. And one of the primary arguments for the proliferation of guns is that if everybody had a gun, we'd be so much safer, and the research just does not show that. Of course, organizations that work to to sell guns, and especially the NRA, have suppressed a lot of the research that could show the detrimental effect of guns on our society.
And you mentioned that there's been a large increase in the number of guns purchased and owned and carried, both openly and concealed, in states that allow that since Obama became president, not because of Obama's policy, but because of what people were afraid Obama would do to make laws to limit the number of guns that are running around in America.
Exactly. And that's still being, I just listened to the vice president of the NRA who gave a speech just at the same time that Trayvon Martin's case really became known to the public. And he was in Washington State, I believe, and he was still saying that in Obama's second term that he is going to take away the people's rights for guns. And so that's very much on the minds of people who are encouraging folks to buy up the guns now. And it's a fear tactic that's being used.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this Sunday afternoon, April 1st, 2012, talking with Jackie Lynn, the Executive Director of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship. We'll be getting back with her in just a few minutes. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program here on WILL 580 AM, 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana, and heard as well simulcast online at will.illinois.edu/AM and archived at that same web address / Keeping the Faith. Coming up at the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, the Y has been a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith. The regular Friday Forum lecture series continues this semester, Creative Approaches to Global Development. And this coming Friday, April 6th at noon at the University Y, the topic is the making of a successful multilateral environmental agreement, the Vienna Convention for the for Protection. So they have a lecture every Friday noon, and this Friday a professor from Civil Environmental Engineering at the university will be addressing that topic. That's April 6th. It's a free lecture. You can call 337-1500 and make a reservation for lunch at the Good Thai Eatery there at the Y, or you can carry a bag lunch or bring something in, or you can simply listen to the free lecture. Also at the Y is a very interesting art exhibit on the main floor by Ramiro Rodriguez. It's called Caritas, the Immigrant, the Word, and Life. And that'll be there at the Y until the very next Art at the Y exhibit opening, April 19, when Masquerade will be on the walls of the Y. It's an exhibition dealing with the issues of concealment and perception. It will include works by Brett Eaton, Sarah Spread, Lauren Martinkus, Kelsey Arnold, all from the School of Art and Design at the University of Illinois. Again, that's the exhibition opening is April 19 from 5 to 7. It is also a Boneyard Arts Festival event. It's free and open to the public, and the exhibition will be on view there at the Y through May the 3rd, anytime from 9 in the morning till 10 at night, a free exhibition. Coming up on Keeping the Faith, next week we'll be talking with Josh Slocum, who's the National Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Alliance, that works to find affordable ways that people can have funeral services. The local president of the Champaign County Funeral Consumers Alliance, Reverend Peter Dick, who's a chaplain at Provena Covenant Hospital, will be in the studio and we'll be talking with Josh Slocum by phone. April 15, Tax Day, our guests will be discussing Earth Care, a program at the First Presbyterian Church in Urbana. David Sherwood and Reverend Dr. Catherine Cusmal will be our guests. On April 22nd, we have a very special archive program with Roger Ebert, the Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic for the Sun-Times in Chicago, a graduate of the University of Illinois and also Urbana High School, a local boy. He has lost his voice, as many listeners know, from throat cancer, but we interviewed him here on this program back in 1999 before the very first Overlook Film Festival at the Virginia Theater, and he talked about religious themes in movies, and that interview had long been lost because we've switched here at WILL to all digital things, and those old tape cassettes got tucked away and we couldn't find them, but they've recently been discovered. And I got an email from Roger today after I told him we were going to be replaying this about how happy he was that this was going to be replayed. He said he remembered the conversation well. And in fact, he's hoping that some of the words he used in that interview he can plug into his new computer voice that's helping him use a computer to speak. So that will be April 22nd, an archive program from April of 1999. Those are some of the programs coming up ahead on Keeping the Faith. And again, to hear archive programs, go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And let me just mention, particularly to people who are listening to this as a podcast, producing these programs at WILL costs money, and you, of course, can listen to them totally free on your various devices, but it is also possible for you to make a donation to help the station continue to make these programs available, and you can do that at willpledge.org. Just go online to willpledge.org and make a contribution to this public radio station and its locally produced programs. Well, let's get back to our guest for today, Jackie Lynn. Jackie, you were talking about particularly the gun campaign and the crosswalk that so many organizations in Chicago are participating in tomorrow, Holy Monday, that's concerned about gun violence, violence to particularly to children. And you mentioned that since 2008, over 600 children have been killed in the city of Chicago mostly by guns. What can a small organization of, in this case, Episcopalians, how do you feel you can possibly impact that?
Well, Episcopalians are small in number, but large in commitment and hope. But we have gathered over 50 organizations in the Chicago area to become partners with Crosswalk. And they are organizations that have been working on this issue for a long time, like Urban De La Rosa, that trains pastors to provide pastoral care for families who have lost a loved one. They are Purpose Over Pain of mothers and fathers who have had children that have been killed mostly by gun violence. And there's the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence, who's currently working to maintain Illinois not to be able to be concealed or carry.
And you mentioned earlier that Illinois is the very last state of 50 that does not allow people to carry guns on their person hidden away.
Right. And so we're working, all of those people are partners with us. So it's certainly not, the Episcopal Diocese of Chicago is the presenter, and we are being led by the All Saints Episcopal Church and the Cathedral of St. James, but we have 50 other partners in this effort, and we want to step up, at least as Episcopalians, and join the others that have been working so hard for so long. We have been involved locally as Episcopalians in the gun legislation, but you know, we want to encourage people to come. We expect over 1,000 people tomorrow night to be walking, but that's just the beginning. Tomorrow, Crosswalk is a procession, but after that, it is action. So on the crosswalkchicago.org website, after tomorrow, there will be multiple ways that ordinary citizens can give an hour, 2 hours to programs like Kids on the Block that are working with teenagers on the local, on their local level, to involve them in activities that are going to encourage them to stay in school. To also, we are having, we've invited in Brian Miller, who runs an organization in Pennsylvania and Maryland called Heeding God's Call. And that's an organization that works with gun shops to have them agree to do background checks, to have them agree to a whole covenant with Heeding God's Call. So Brian Miller is coming in as a follow-up to Crosswalk on April 26th at 6 o'clock at Grace Church on Dearborn in Chicago. We're inviting in another speaker in May. We're supporting St. Sabina's ARC, which has tutoring and mentoring. So we're hoping to just get a lot of volunteers that are going to be doing both advocacy work and trying to pass laws that have stricter background checks and restrict gun handgun purchase to maybe one a month, some sensible gun laws. So we're doing the whole spectrum in terms of ways that people can get involved and volunteer.
Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who'd like to join this conversation and ask Jackie Lynn a question or make a comment on the issues we're discussing. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. If it's long distance, a toll-free call at 1-800-222-9455. Jackie, I mentioned earlier that you and I met at a rally in Springfield, Illinois, trying to encourage legislators to raise the minimum wage here in Illinois. Why were you and other people from the Episcopal Peace Fellowship there? How did that fit in with your concerns?
Well, as I mentioned, as a deacon, you know, we are very concerned with the plight of the poor and to increase the standard of living for many people who are making minimum wage and have no benefits in their jobs, and that's an issue that the Episcopal Church has taken stands on. And in fact, in November, we passed a resolution in the Diocese of Chicago to support the campaign to raise the minimum wage from $8.25 an hour to $10.65 an hour over a period of 4 years. We know that this would generate jobs from the research that has been done. It will also increase the standard of living for literally thousands of Illinois residents and be of no real cost to the state and minimal cost to the companies that would do this gradually over time to raise the minimum wage. We think it's a real justice issue and a moral issue that we need to take a stand for.
You mentioned that as an Episcopal deacon, your job is to interpret the world to the church. Tell us some of the ways that you do that as a deacon, particularly through the Episcopal Peace Fellowship.
Well, one of the ways that Episcopal Peace Fellowship right now is doing this is that we have action groups on different issues. One of the action groups that has just grown enormously in the last year due to some pretty amazing volunteer leaders is what we call the Palestine-Israel Network. And getting the truth out to our members about what is happening in the world. We think first you've got to know what's going on, and then you've got to decide what you want to do with that information. And so our Palestine-Israel network, thanks to the Presbyterian network that created a wonderful study document called Steadfast Hope, we have sort of turned Steadfast Hope, which is a study guide about Palestine and Israel, into an Episcopal version. And so we have been spreading this study guide throughout the country with so that people can understand it. It is a beautiful book, Steadfast Hope, The Palestinian Quest for a Just Peace. And we have just about sold out of copies and are needing to reorder. We have distributed 5,000 so far across the country, and our members are reading and studying. And what the study guide does and what the DVD does that people watch is that they really don't know what's going on in Palestine and in Israel. We really don't get the information. We have almost a news blockout. There was a little bit more back in 2010 and 2009 at Obama's at the beginning of his term. But we really don't know the effects of occupation, and we hear about the violence that is that happens, but we don't hear about the deprivation and the real awful effects of occupation, when a people are occupied and when there is so little justice from Israel going into Palestine. So we're working with both Jewish groups, the Jewish Voice for Peace, and we're working with other Christian groups to get this information out and then to suggest different ways that they can respond.
Are there other international issues that the Episcopal Peace Fellowship has focused on in recent years?
Well, of course, the Iraq War. And we worked with many Christian organizations. We wanted to show at the time, we work with interfaith organizations a lot, but back in 2007, many of the peace fellowships, the Christian peace fellowships, wanted to show that what Christians were asking of President Bush to do about the war. So that was really we have some resolutions that are coming up this year. We have a general convention, which means the entire Episcopal Church from the United States will meet in Indiana to vote on resolutions that will then become policy for our church. And so the Episcopal Peace Fellowship works hard to propose resolutions. And so we have resolutions concerning the use of drones. We have a resolution about Palestine-Israel. And we have several other resolutions, one having to do with the Sudan. And we have a resolution about making each of our churches and our diocesan centers, our church office buildings, gun-free zones. So we work locally and nationally and then internationally as well. But one of our primary focuses right now, of course, is on Palestine-Israel.
Tell us how the Episcopal Peace Fellowship forms its policies. For example, how do you decide what issues to concentrate on and what position to take on them? For example, I'm sure within the Episcopal Church, as within most religious traditions, there are varying opinions about some wars might be just, others would say all wars are unjust. How do you decide?
Our members decide what issues they're working on and what stance they will take locally. as I said, we have about 2,000 members across the country, and we have different action groups that will decide on an issue. Like, we have an action group around the death penalty, and we have an action group on the Iraq War. We have an action group, the Palestine-Israel Network, and the members of EPF in those action groups determine the direction and the policy that they will take. When it's a major issue, then we have a board of 20 people from across the country, and the action groups will take an issue to our board that we call the National Executive Council, and then they will debate the issue and actually vote.
And so you decide by majority rules, or does it have to be unanimous?
It does not have to be unanimous. And so, yes, we decide by majority rules. Actually, we have recently taken a vote that was not unanimous, but majority ruled, and so we went ahead with the policy.
Can you tell us what that was?
I can. it was a policy around, the initials are BDS, and it means boycott, divest, and sanction. And I believe that we are, if not the only, one of the only peace fellowships that took a stand around this issue, and it has to do with Palestine, Israel. And it has to do with Israel to engage in sanctions against Israel to force them to end the occupation. And, of course, we work with many other organizations in this effort. Thinking of ways that we can encourage our members if they have stock in companies that have investments in Israel to divest of those, or to especially divest of those companies that are supporting the occupation. We're focusing right now on the occupation, not saying particularly to boycott all Israel goods and services, but to focus on the occupation and those that particularly benefit the occupation.
And you mentioned that was a not a unanimous decision, so there was a lot of discussion about that, I'm sure.
Yes, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of praying, and we took time to listen to our members who visit Israel-Palestine numerous times throughout the year, that are way better experts than I would be on the issue. And we honored this action group of ours and, took a lot of time to think about it, to pray about it, and to figure out, which steps we would take with regard to these very, very serious action steps.
Jackie Lynn, we're down to our last 3 or 4 minutes. Tell me some things about the Episcopal Peace Foundation that I don't know enough to even ask.
Well, let me see. One of the things that we are very big on is young adults, because if you don't involve young adults, you're going to die.
Sure.
As an organization. So a third of our board are people under the age of 35, and we've even got some 40-year-olds on our board. And we have just completed amazing work that young adults, these are led by young adults. We have urban pilgrimages. And in March, we had 3 urban pilgrimages, which they're held during spring break and attract both young adults who are out of college but also who are in college still. And we had one in Boston, in Austin, Texas, and in L.A., California. Actually, it was in Oxnard. So we had one urban rural pilgrimage, and on our website, people can read. Our website is epfnational.org. And
that's EP as in peace, EPF.
That's right.
Say it again, epfnational.org.
That's all right. Right. And they can read about our urban pilgrimages. We're having a retreat for young adults from across the country this Labor Day in Chicago. And young adults are coming into the leadership in a big way in September. So we really have done this work of honoring young adults, seeing their leadership, and appreciating it and following it.
We are close to the end of our time. Let me thank our guests today. Jackie Lynn, L-Y-N-N, who is the Executive Director of the Episcopal Peace Foundation. Her office is in Chicago. That's the national office. She is a deacon in the Episcopal Church and affiliated with the Episcopal Cathedral of Chicago. I'll remind listeners again in the Chicago area or others who'd like to make a little pilgrimage there tomorrow on Monday, Holy Monday, this 2012. April 2nd, starting at St. James Episcopal Cathedral, a procession will go all the way to Stroger Hospital, 3.7 miles, as part of Crosswalk, calling attention to the over 600 deaths of children in Chicago since 2008, many by gun violence. For more information about the Episcopal Peace Fellowship, go to epfnational.org, and you can get information there. Thank you, Jackie, for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith, Josh Slocum, Executive Director for the Funeral Consumers Alliance nationally, and the local president, Reverend Peter Dick, chaplain, Protestant chaplain at Provena Covenant Hospital in Urbana. April 15, Earth Care, David Sherwood, Reverend Dr. Catherine Cusmal will be our guests. An archive program, April 22nd, from 1999, Roger Ebert talking about religious themes in films before Roger sadly lost his ability to speak due to cancer. On April 29, from the Unitarian Universalist Church, Reverend Axel Gehrman will be our guest. Don Nolan will be the guest host. I'll be traveling that week. He'll be talking about the current Wall Street protests. On May 6th, Joan Bailey will be talking about how to teach adult Sunday school classes in exciting ways. We have a couple artists coming up in the weeks ahead. May 13, Steve Gilday. And then on May 27, John David Mooney from Chicago. Two artists talking about the various values that are found in their works and others. Those are some of the programs ahead on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Illinois Public Media's spring fundraising drive starts in a few weeks, and we want to keep the drive short and our member support strong. So for every $25,000 we raise before April 13th, we'll deduct a full day from the drive. It's our way of thanking you for helping us reach the April goal of raising $250,000 in membership support. Please do your part to shorten this drive by contributing online right now at willpledge.org. Thanks so much.
This is Illinois Public Media, WIL.